Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. I'm busy catching up after my trip to the USA and Canada. There's just so much to do and so much to talk about and so much to tell you and show you. This thing that you're about to hear is actually an interview that I did on the 31st of May 2019. Briza in Ireland and I did this interview where we spoke about the fact that the Jews had got the police in the UK to go and get hold of Graham Hart and to interrogate him over a song. It seems that it's not just Alison Chablot alone who can't do any music that pisses off the Jews. Anybody else who does anything musical is also pissing off the Jews. Graham had done a very nice little music video called The Hoax Train, and it actually included film footage of Jews at Auschwitz, all kinds of footage of Jews doing exercises, Jews doing plays, Jews doing a whole bunch of stuff that they apparently weren't allowed to do by the Germans because the Germans were busy killing them. Anyway, this film footage is film footage that he got, and I've seen lots of photos about similar things. Anyway, Graham Hart did this song called The Hoax Train, which I liked a lot, and I put it on History Reviewed, and it's still on History Reviewed, and I will actually put it on the top of the page so that you can see it. Anyhow, Graham was interrogated by the police for hours, and he dealt with it in an interesting way, and the interview that you're going to hear is Briza discussing this with me, Briza discussing what Graham did, how he did it, and how he stood up to these police. So this is yet another incident where the police have to go and do the bidding of the Jews to go and harass somebody who's just doing his own thing. They've already been doing other things to destroy the income of Graham Hart. Graham has been very good to me. He's had me on a number of interviews, but I've been falling behind on lots of things. But this is an interview that you have to listen to. Before you hear the actual interview, I'm also going to play the song that this relates to so that you can hear the excellent song. And then you'll hear what Briza and I have to say about it. But in Britain, in Jewish Britain, no free speech, and even being an artist doesn't keep you away from Jewish attention. So here's The Hoax Train.
Get off the hoax train, the first stop, we'll be making, we'll be out.
Hi there, Bryza. How are you doing? Welcome to History Reviewed.
Yes, thank you, Jan, for inviting me on. It's always good to talk to you. And I hope you had a good trip to North America. I think you were over there for quite a while, and I'd say that was an interesting experience.
Yeah, there's a lot that happened there that I want to talk about. Mm-hmm. And there are many things I learned, so certainly was good. Mm-hmm. And you and I were going to do a show, but then we ran into something of a problem.
We did indeed, so, because we were supposed to do a show just last Monday, which was just the 26th or 7th, wasn't it, something like that, May. 27th of May, and it was kind of lined up, but the previous Thursday to that, our good friend Graham Hart, who co-hosts the show, the Graham Hart Show at Breiser, he was arrested by the agents of the state, forces of the crown. The Jew-controlled crown came along, 8 of them arrived at his door at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And basically kidnapped him from his home and held him for 8 or 9 hours and questioned him on his well-known video that's out there now on YouTube called Hoax Train, plus all the other things he's been saying on radio as well. So
tell us, now why, when they pitched up, what did they say to him? Did they... They had to explain why they were there.
Yeah. They arrested him on suspicion of hate speech and anti-Semitism. And they also had a warrant to enter his house to seize property, which they could use to try and gain evidence. And I actually have, Graham told me exactly what was on the warrant, actually, and even that warrant itself is suspect because Graham was looking at it, even though he's only got a copy of it. He reckons that the signature on the warrant is not a genuine signature, or it's a photocopy. It has to be an original signature. So they even came with a unlawful warrant by the looks of it. Now, I can't prove that for sure, but Graham is certainly looking into that one. So
I take it that he's got somebody as an attorney who's looking into the matter.
No, he's not. He's kind of doing this on his own because Graham is quite clued in on a lot of lawful stuff, you know. So I don't think he's going to go down that. I don't think he's gone down that road yet. You know, if he needs help from someone, I'm sure he'll ask, you know. But anyway, he was on the warrant. He said, "We're looking for evidence in the form of correspondence between the suspect and others purporting the same anti-Semitic views." And evidence in the form of anti-Semitic recordings, radio shows, anti-Semitic posts on social media, and lyrics relating to the production of a music video called Hoax Train, in addition to specific items and any other correspondence or material of an insulting or an inflammatory nature, which purport some the same anti-Semitic views and opinions. And also, Graham pointed out that there was quite a few spelling mistakes on that warrant, would you believe, Jan? So they can't even spell properly.
Do you have a copy of that warrant?
I don't know. Graham just read that out to me when before we did the show. I did a show with Dennis Fetcher last night. And Graham, I was speaking to Graham beforehand, and he kind of just read, you know, so I just took a note of that. So
You're already making me wonder whether this is actually done by the police or whether the Jews are doing this like directly.
Yeah, I think they are. I think directly. It seems to be, Jan. I mean, I obviously can't prove this, but I mean, it seems to be that they're under direction from the Jews. Yeah. And so when Graham was taken to the station, I mean, he was asked, or will I go that way or what way will I proceed?
Well, the question that I wanted to ask is, I'm asking myself the question, is this a proper legal thing, or have the Jews just quickly managed to connive something together? Because it sounds, you know, you say spelling mistakes, you say it doesn't look genuine. So how the heck did they do this? This is obviously not the true system, because that to me, that in and of itself is a very interesting question, because it's a question that I've asked myself, even with regard to Americans, especially the Americans, is how many times is it actually true government officials, and how many times is it some Jew sneaking around inside the system, just inside the system, or maybe not even properly in the system, but using the system?
It's quite possible, because if you want to know the background to this story, there's an organization, well, a kind of a group on Facebook, and it's called Cornwall Anti-Semitism Watch. Graham is from Cornwall, which is on the southwest of England.
Right.
And Graham is a well-known musician in Cornwall, so he's well known around the place. And he heard that there's a local rugby club that plays his music at halftime for the, you know, for the fans and whatever. And a lot of, you know, all the supporters of the club liked the song. And he was told one day that they're no longer playing his song at halftime. And Graham thought that was kind of strange, you know, because he hasn't been to one of the games for a while. So he thought that's kind of weird. But, you know, didn't say any more about it. And then
Now, the song that they're playing, that's not the Hoax Train.
No. This is just a Cornwall song, just a local kind of Cornwall song. Yeah, totally innocent altogether, you know, nothing. So it's just a kind of a song to kind of boost the morale of the supporters and everything at halftime type of thing. That's all that is. Right. So anyway, and then the next thing he sees a post on Facebook aimed at him from this Cornwall Anti-Semitism Watch, saying that this vile, evil, anti-Semitic racist Graham Hart has produced this video called Hoax Train, and he needs to be reported to the police as soon as possible, you know. And that's, and then the next thing we heard then, that on the local, it's called Cornwall Live, it's a local kind of online newspaper, basically saying that his song has been banned from this rugby club, right, because of his anti-Semitic views. And it was actually also on the BBC regional news as well. So even the BBC got a hold of it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So Graham was all over the news, as you can imagine. And so he was obviously slightly concerned about it, you know. And he obviously thinking, what's going to happen now? But so I think he was kind of half expecting this to happen, what happened last Thursday. He was half expecting this to happen. But of course, it happened out of the blue, and you know, it's always a bit of a shock to the system when it does happen.
Yeah.
So, and the guy behind this Cornwall Anti-Semitism Watch, his name is Tim Dwelly. He's a councillor. He's an independent councillor. He used to be with the British Labour Party, but he left there, I believe, on allegations of bullying, and now he seems to be going after members of the Labour Party, as you know, Jan, who are as left as you can get. But because because they support the Palestinian cause, they're anti-Semitic. So this guy Dwelly is going after members of the Labour Party. Even I mean, this is, as I said, this is turning into a bit of a joke, really, when you think about it. You know,
it's actually good when their stuff starts becoming hypocritical, self-hypocritical. Mm-hmm. Their whole story starts breaking down. I like that.
Yeah.
And liberalism's kind of becoming like that too.
Yeah, and I think they're shooting themselves in the foot here as well, big time. And which is great for us, I think, because again, as you said, it exposes their nonsense. So so Graham was taken to the police station. They took some things from as well from the house. One was Thomas Goodridge's book, Summer of Hate. They also took, would you believe, you know, because Graham was a great supporter of the Palestinian cause before, you know, this is what got him into all of this.
He had a
Free Palestine t-shirt, and he had also a Palestinian flag, and they took that. That's seemingly anti-Semitic now, yeah? Oh. And they also took a beer coaster, which belonged to his father, that he bought, that his father bought in Germany, which had some kind of Germanic runes on it.
I mean, oh, wow. Yeah. So runes might also be a sign that you're a closet racist.
Yes, yes. My God. I mean, what are they trying to get on him on this? Like, is this, what's this going to prove, you know? Nothing. I mean, and even Tom Goodrich's book is available, I believe, on Amazon. So it's like Amazon anti-Semitic now, you know? It's kind of, I don't know how to explain it, but it's turning into a kind of, even though it's kind of serious when you look at this, it's just totally ridiculous.
Yes. Yes.
Totally ridiculous. And there's no, yeah, again, there's no hate speech laws per se. I mean, you can't have a hate speech law, you know? People get offended every day or the week, you know, and you just get over it. I mean, yes, you can get upset by things what people say, but you get over it. And but this guy, Dwelly, seems to be out for Graham big time. And I reckon he's behind this raid, without a doubt. I think he's got contacts in the police force and use that. Again, I can't prove it, but it just seems that way. Yeah, and when you look at it, as you said, because the warrant looks faulty, spelling mistakes, it looked like it was hastily put together, you know.
What struck me about the wording is all the anti-Semitism this, anti-Semitism that, yeah, instead of hate. Mm-hmm. You know, that sounds like very much like a Jew has been writing it.
Mm-hmm.
Just this doesn't sound like it's something that's been written by maybe a normal policeman.
No.
If somebody, as much as they would want to, you know, it's just that, I'll tell you what is of great fascination to me is, it's something I've been trying to explain to some people. It is, where does Jewish power really end, and where does the, let's call it the elite of the country, begin and end? Because I don't see those two forms of power as actually being fully the same thing. Mm-hmm. I suspect that this is just sort of the way that I've been looking at the USA, is that, yeah, there's got to be like a start and end point of the elite itself and a start and end point of the Jews. And I'll tell you why I think in that way is because the WASPs, the white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, mm-hmm, who are the elite of America, they surely, this is a question I've had for people, surely they do not want to see America itself burn to the ground.
No.
Whereas the Jew won't care. I don't think the Jew in any way, shape, or form is concerned if America burns to the ground. And, yeah, and in the same way, I extend that argument to Britain and to Europe to say, where exactly does the elite of each country start and end, and where do the Jews start and end? Because I have a feeling that there comes a point where this kind of breaks down. Mm-hmm. You know, if you might get to, you know, maybe we get to a point where the Jew is pushing the Jew agenda, but the elite realizes that even when that in the future, the elite still want to live in the same country. Whereas the Jew might be moving to China. And
yes, yeah.
Do you see what I'm kind of getting at?
Yeah, yeah, and, I know what you mean, yeah.
And even the police and other people, there's got to be a point at which they say, you know, do we really go after our own people for these things? You know, is this really a crime? I'm just, because I've kind of picked up, even with Alfred Schaefer in Germany, that it's as if the German police themselves also have got some kind of limitations, you know, because, yeah, they know that they are busy arresting their own people, but is this really a real crime by the definition of the people who live there?
Yeah, so that's true.
So
yeah, I think so too, because when Graham was being interviewed in the police station, they treated him well. They didn't, you know, bully him or anything like that. But they're just trying to try and wear him down with questions is what they try and do, you know. But yeah, I think when he Well, you know, he answered some of their questions, but he kind of gave them a bit of a history lesson, really, and he also kind of got them to really look in the mirror a little bit here. And you could see they were scratching their heads, and you could see that they were, well, this is what Graham was telling me anyway, that they were maybe thinking that Graham has a point here, you know.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
And I think that's why after 8 or 9 hours of, well, actually, Dave, there was a few, I'd say it was about 7 hours they interviewed him for, and there was a break or two in between. But at the end of it, I think it was the end of their shift probably, and they said, let's just go home. You know, what's the point of this, you know? So they let him go without any charges, just pending further investigations. So I don't know, they're just going to probably just trawl to his computers and see if they can find any kind of incriminating, you know, evidence, so to speak, of, you know, I don't know what they're going to look for there, because Graham has never, I think what they're trying to find is something advocating some kind of violence or something like that, which Graham has never done, you know. So, yeah, I don't know where it's going to go from here, Jan, to be quite honest. It's going to be interesting to see what the next step is going to be, you know. But if Graham is, if he's taken again, he's going to do the same thing, you know. He's not going to give him any information whatsoever, nothing, you know.
So in Graham's background, you say that he's quite well, he's quite knowledgeable legally. Can you just give me a bit more background on that?
Yeah, well, he's kind of been looking into this for quite a few years. I wouldn't say he's an expert on anything now, but he kind of, it's all stuff that he's been listening to, radio, different radio shows and people that he's met who kind of know stuff. I've been looking into this for quite a long time as well. And it's all about realizing who you are in all of this, that you've got the power here. And sometimes if you, even if you employ an attorney or a lawyer on your case, that they don't always do the right thing by you, you know. I'm not saying that of all lawyers, but you've got to be careful there, because they can, their first duty is to the court and you're next. You know, you've got to remember that. So you're second in the list here. And so when you go in and defend yourself, you're standing in your own power. You could say you're standing in God's kingdom. You're the man. OK, you're not the legal fiction, which is the name. So so Graham Hart, that name is just sort of the birth certificate name, which is owned by the state. It's a legal fiction. And it's only when you consent to that name, then they have you, you see, that you've now consented to their jurisdiction.
Interestingly enough, when I was in Canada, we actually had a discussion after one of our meetings. People were talking exactly about exactly what you're talking about there.
Yeah,
because I've heard that same kind of thing a couple of times myself, and people also talk about, I'm not sure if it's like the law of the Admiralty or the sea or something.
Admiralty maritime law. So yeah, it's law of the sea, not law of the land, you know. So it's merchant, it's commercial law, it's commerce, okay? So it only really applies if you're engaging in commerce. So even like a license, if you need a license, even for a driving license, you actually don't actually need a license, because if you're just going from A to B, you're just traveling. You're not engaging in any commercial enterprise. Say like a taxi driver would need a license because he's carrying passengers and he's engaging in commerce. You know, but an ordinary man shouldn't need a driving license because he's just traveling from A to B. But of course, so, we consent to the driving license, so that's why all the rules, the traffic rules, apply to you when you're on the road. You see, because you have a license, you've consented to their system.
Now, are you saying that this Admiralty law or law of the sea, that this underlies all the other laws? What is a bit of the deeper basis?
Yeah,
I'm just very curious. That's why I'm asking.
Basically, there's legal and there's lawful, okay? And lawful, there's only one law, really, which is all, this is all based on common law, is you cause no harm or loss to anybody. That's it, really. And there's also contract law, which is what we regard as a civil law. So if you're in a breach, if you know, if you enter into a contract and you're in breach of the contract, the other party has a right to redress on that. So, and then there's legality, which is man-made law, okay? And they need you to consent to that. Everything is by consent. And we fall into that trap because it's very clever how the system works, because it's very easy to consent to these things because they trick you with the words. That's why it's called legalese. It's like it's English, but it's another language, because some of the words in legalese are the opposite of what we think they mean. So this is why it's important. You know, I think it's a good idea for people to get a legal dictionary. Black's Law Dictionary is one. Bouvier's is another one. And look up the meanings of some of these words, and you'll be astounded at what you come across. You really will. And I think it's important for people. A lot of the people in our movement, they're all very good at giving out and pointing at the Jews and pointing at this and that and the other. But when it comes to this particular topic, they don't particularly like, because it kind of gets a bit boring and technical. And I can understand that in a way, but actually it's very simple. And I also think it's very, very important for people to get their heads around this, because they are coming after us, folks. They are coming after us, and we need to know how to defend ourselves. And we can do this. And Graham did it the other last week. He did it himself on his own. It was an amazing performance. I'm so proud of him, what he did, you know, because all that stuff that we've been talking about for years, and there it happened that particular day. And he did well, man. He did so well.
Okay, I just want to clarify that I understand it. You say legal versus lawful, mm-hmm. and law is, when we're talking about law, that is normally criminal law, and that's got to do with causing harm to another.
That's right.
I got that right.
Yeah.
Then contract law is civil law.
Yeah.
And then there's legality, which is man-made law, mm-hmm. and that is consent. That's the consenting thing.
Yeah, that's
the legalese.
That's the legalese. That's the acts and the statutes that the government put out there, okay? So, you know, an act of parliament, that's legal. And they put that out there. So when a government passes an act and they put it out to the public and we accept it, well, then it's called like, if you consent to something, then it becomes law in their eyes, you see? So we have to kind of try and stay out of their jurisdiction as much as we possibly can. And it's just it's important just to people to get their heads around that one. You know, also a law would be, you could take it and say it's under God's law, okay? So this is why the Bible is very important too, because that's why it's used in courtrooms, because that's the law, if, you know, from the Creator. I mean, you can't get much higher than that. And it even says in the Bible that, you know, man-made laws are an abomination, I think, something to that effect. So by consenting to these man-made laws, we're actually going against the Bible. So Christian people out there should really take that on board, you know?
Okay. So tell me a bit more about what actually happened and what he said and his performance, because that is of great interest. How did he manage to deal with them?
Okay, when they came for him at the door, he said straight away, he said, "I'm neither assisting nor resisting," which is a great little line, I tell you that much, because he wasn't being aggressive, okay? He was being polite. He was just saying, "I'm neither assisting, but I'm not resisting either." So they basically nearly had to carry him to the police car, because he wouldn't move.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
You know, he just said, "You can carry me." He said, I'm not going to assist you by walking to the car, but I'm not going to resist you either, so you can carry me," pretty much.
Oh, wow.
And they put him into the police car, and then when they got to the station, they said, "Oh, you can get out of the car now." Again, he wouldn't move. They had to literally lift him out of the car and bring him into the station, you know.
And how were they taking this?
I don't know, they were fine by it, actually. They weren't getting upset about it or anything. And again, they were asking if they had...
It must have been different for them.
Oh, very different, yeah. They were asking, what have we got here, you know?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Are they like smiling? Are they a little bit dumbfounded?
Probably a bit of both, I'd say, you know. He wouldn't give his name. You know, he says, I'm Graham of the Hart family.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm a man, also known as Graham of the Hart family. I'm a man. See, that's where you have to, again, you have to kind of say these things, because that's what you are. You're a man. You're not a legal fiction. You're not a piece of paper. You're a living, sovereign being, flesh and blood. You see? So I'm the man who goes by the name of. And that's what they had to bring him in under, you know. And they had to kind of check him into the station. And then they when they sat him down, they asked him again his name. And he would go, are you addressing me? As in me, not Graham Hart. Are you addressing me? And uh-huh. They'd say, yes, but who else would be addressing? And he says, well, then he just went, is this a civil or criminal matter? So this goes back to that, what I'm talking about, those two types of law. So is it a civil case or is it a criminal case? Civil means, is there a breach of a contract somewhere? Did I sign a contract to say that I couldn't upset Jews somewhere? You know, obviously there isn't. And then is it a criminal matter because have I hurt anybody? And the policeman said, well, it's a criminal matter. And then he asked the question. This is always important to answer any questions with another question. Because other than that, if you don't do that, you're kind of making a statement, if you know what I mean. And any statements can be taken down and used in evidence. So if you ask questions, it's a very good way of defending yourself. So he then asked, well, who is the injured party? And they said, well, it's Cornwall Anti-Semitism Watch. He says, well, that's just a dead entity. That doesn't exist. That's just a group. It's not a living soul, a living being. How can that make a complaint? And they were just scratching their heads here at this point, going, oh my God, how are we going to deal with this one? And then they tried to ask him his questions about his political opinions. There was lots of different questions, but again, as I said, Graham, either he was like no comment. Is this civil or criminal matter? Or else he did, when he felt like it, he gave him a little bit of an education. Now, for me, I wouldn't have actually done that. I would have just kept no comment or civil or criminal. But Graham felt like he did, you know, he did what he had to do at the time. And that's fine, you know, do whatever you need to do. But the thing is, it was effective. Because, you know, for example, he was told, but this is offensive. And you know, Graham says, well, I get offended by the government in this country every single day. I don't come running to you guys.
Just the
best. Yeah, you know, things like this. And of course, you know, what are these police officers going to say to that one, you know?
should say, the BBC offends me every day of my life.
That's it. Tim Dwelly offended me, calling me a vile, evil racist. You know?
Yeah. You can think of dozens, if not thousands, of things that offend you that really piss you off.
Yeah.
But you don't go running to the police every day.
Yeah.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So he, you know, there was all different. I can't remember exactly everything, but there was lots of different things. But he fended them off brilliantly, and as I said, he didn't give an inch. They were also asking about me. They knew my full name.
Yeah.
They were asking him about, I said this last night, and Dennis, they asked about Dennis Fetcher, and they asked about others as well. I won't give their names, but you know them, Jan. They're people that we know well. And Graham just went, no comment. He wouldn't answer any of that, you know. And they even went back to the time when Graham was on Renegade Broadcasting, which is about nearly 3 or 4 years ago now. You know, so this is like, how long have they been looking at him, I'm wondering, you know? And they've been listening to all our shows, pretty much, you know? And I'm thinking, again, is this where people's taxes are going on police trawling through radio shows, trying to find some kind of thing, you know, that they can get someone because they might have offended the Jews or anybody else for that matter, right? I mean, isn't this crazy? Yeah, this is just crazy stuff. This is why I think the people ordinary people should stand up and say, hang on a minute, this is totally wrong. This is a complete abuse of power here. You're using our money to go after innocent people while there's criminals out on the street raping and murdering. We've got all sorts of immigrants coming in here and raping our women and stealing and mugging old ladies. And nothing happens there, you know. You're under-resourced and overstretched on that point, but you can send 8 men to Graham Hart's house.
Now tell me something. You say that the police indicated that they had listened to some of our shows.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, how did they remark it? What did they say?
I'm not quite sure what Graham just told me that they were listening. So as I said, and they even told him that they'd been listening to him back to the time when Graham kind of started out on this on Renegade Broadcasting. He was only on Renegade for about 6 or 7 months before they let him go there. But they've been listening to him back for that time, 4 years.
That's a long time.
It is a long time, you know. And I mean, are they employing someone to do this? Is someone on a salary, a wage to do this? I said, this is abuse of taxpayers' money. If it really it is when you think about it.
That is, well, it's beyond crazy because it's like you say, you know, there are real criminals out there. Why don't they focus their energy on that? But
exactly. But
all of this, anyway, in terms of what they were approaching him on, they were talking more about anti-Semitism than hate or both?
Well, both. They also brought up, you know, his issues with regards to black people and Muslims. And he says, well, I have no issue with these people. He says, I just don't want them in my country. I said, there's too many of them. We've got to look after our own people first. You know, reasonable answer.
Yes.
You know?
And always, it's curious for me, how are the police themselves reacting? Let me ask, the police, were all the police white males?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent.
That's
even better.
Yeah, it's a case of breaking them. You know, I think Graham was got through to these people. I mean, I can't be sure, obviously, Jan, you know, but I think, you know, when one guy had to get up and go out for a break himself, you know.
Yeah.
For about 10 minutes, you know, because you're thinking, how are we going to break this guy down, you know? And because he wouldn't, you know, he wouldn't answer the questions that they really wanted him to answer. He was like, no comment, or is this a civil or criminal matter? But any questions, or any other ones, Graham kind of, as I said, gave him a bit of an education and said, listen, guys, look around you. Look, you should be doing your job and protecting and serving the people, the community that you work in, because you've taken an oath of office to do this, you know?
Nice. So, no, I think it sounds to me like that lesson that he's giving is very good. That is very good.
Yeah.
That is excellent.
He's done.
I'm not in any way, shape, or form saying anything negative about this. In fact, I would tell you that if they came to me, I wouldn't even do 1% of this. I actually wouldn't even know where to begin.
Yeah.
I think this is quite amazing that he hit them with this.
Yeah.
Because this is so weird, and he's done it all by himself.
Exactly.
Caught off guard.
Yeah.
You know, somebody just knocking on your door and they're nabbing you.
Yeah.
And being able to, you know, keep your pose.
Yeah, not only that, Graham is on medication, which he's obviously tried to get off, but he's been on it for years. And they wouldn't give him, they wouldn't allow him to take his medication, you know. And when they did have a break for about an hour, this is another funny story actually. When they brought him back to his cell, first of all, because the adrenaline was pumping, obviously, which would be in a situation like that, he got quite sick, violently sick in the cell. He just threw up all over the place, you know. He was. I think what that was, actually, he was purging everything, you know what I mean? And he was actually, it made him stronger, I think. It was just pretty amazing.
No, I mean, this is hectic. So he was put in a cell and questioned?
No, he was put in a cell when they had a break. And when he was in the cell, when he was in the cell, obviously, they had to get him to take off his shoes and also his trousers.
Why?
And this, and the, because, you know, the shoelaces, just in case he might try and damage himself. And hang himself. You know, the usual stuff.
Are you serious? You got to take your shoes off and your trousers off.
Yeah, they have to give you a special pair of trousers to wear.
Oh, God.
So, but the thing is, they said to him, like, Graham, can you take off your shoes, please? And he says, I'm neither assisting nor resisting. So they actually had to lift up one of his legs to take off one shoe. Then they had to lift up the other leg to take off the other shoe. Then they had to basically pull down. It's like undressing a child, a small child. He wouldn't assist them, you know. So they had to do it. It was brilliant, man. It was fantastic what he did, you know.
I must tell you that those police afterwards, they got to be talking among themselves.
Oh, absolutely.
They're going to be talking about this maybe for weeks, if not months, because it's so weird for them to get this kind of reaction out of somebody.
Yeah.
And then on top of it, they have to ask themselves, why are they executing this? Because I find it literally impossible to believe that a white male in a Western world country that's considered to be free, that he would have to, he's got to go and ask himself, why am I doing this in my job? Is this why I became a policeman?
Exactly. And
then there's also got to be the thing of going back to his superior, they got to be talking to their superiors and say, how are we supposed to deal with this? Are we supposed to do this?
Yeah.
There's just got to be like a lot of stuff.
Oh yeah, I mean, and even the kind of the legal team that work with the police have to be wondering now, what can we do here? Because I think they know that there is no hate speech or there's no anti-Semitic laws unless you consent to doing these things. You see, this is why they wanted to break you down, to kind of say, oh, I apologize, I shouldn't have said that, you know. And but he didn't
admitting
say that.
Yeah. Admitting guilt,
that's it. Yeah.
That once you admit guilt, you've knifed yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You've consented again. You see this word consent. You've consented to them, and then they can kind of they can get you on something. You know, even if he did admit to that, I don't think they could do very much. They might go to court. He might get a slap on the wrist and it's kind of a fine or suspended sentence. But he wasn't going to go there. Why should he? He did nothing. He did nothing wrong. And this is always what's going through his mind through all of this, is he did nothing wrong. He's saying to himself, Graham, I've done nothing wrong. I've done nothing wrong. And that's it. Absolutely. He hasn't done anything, you know. And the police know this as well. And this is why I think they are now in a bit of a quandary here, because they don't know what to do next. The ball is in their court now as to what the next move is, you know. So we'll just have to wait and see. And, you know, they got his computer and his phone, which they can hold, I think, legally for 4 weeks, I think. But after that, Graham says he's going to be sending him an invoice for storage fees. £1,000 a day.
Wow. Look, they're doing exactly to him what they were doing to Alfred Schaefer.
Yeah. Now, the thing that, you know, see, the problem I think with Alfred was, I think Alfred, obviously we know Alfred, he's a passionate man and he wanted to get that out there. And he did, I think, have a big effect. But unfortunately, he paid the price, you know. Now, again, in Germany, I think Germany is different from the UK. Germany is a full-on dictatorship, right?
Yeah.
It really is. And I think even if you ask civil or criminal or you didn't give your name, I think they just lock you up anyway. You know, I think that's how bad it is in Germany.
Look, I mean, they've got that sort of generic hate speech law, which can be used for literally anything. And anyway, in Alfred's case, there are other things that came into play.
Yeah.
Like family specifically reported him and so on.
Yeah.
So again, you know, just on that point, Alfred being reported by a family member, Graham possibly being reported by this guy who's in charge of this anti-Semitic organization or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know what? That in and of itself tells me something else. That if the police, because if the police and the security services of the nation, right, the spies, the military intelligence, MI6, all those people, if they thought that Graham was a threat to national security, they would have carried out some kind of action. They would have reported him. In all these cases, the people reporting our people are not actually people in the system. They are civilians who are reporting them. And I think that is a big issue to point out. That the military, the spies, the police spies themselves, if they thought any of these people, including Alfred Schaefer, if they thought any of those people were an actual threat to the system that they are supposed to protect, they themselves would have initiated something.
Yeah, I think so.
The fact that this comes always from a civilian source makes me think that is the Jew pushing the button here, because those people in those military intelligence police people, I think those people do not in the slightest think that someone like Graham or Alfred Schaefer is in any way a threat to his nation.
No, absolutely not.
They are the people with the true power to spy. And if they believed that man was some kind of threat, they could freaking have him locked up in an instant. Because my understanding is that in Britain and Europe, that they don't engage in entrapment in Britain and Europe, because all that they need to do is gather together enough evidence to show that this man is a danger or he's about to do something. Once they've got enough evidence, they just go into the system and they say, go and arrest this guy immediately, or let's catch him right now. Yeah, and they will do it, okay? But they clearly don't have anything on either Alfred or Graham or any of these other people. And for them, this must be a joke. Therefore, this shows that this is the Jew coming and twisting the arm of people and hitting it from a civilian angle. That's very
And I mean, you know, there's Ursula Haverback, a 90-year-old woman. I mean, what kind of a threat is she?
All of these things are the same thing. The Jew is trying to find some reason to use the system against our people. Yeah. And it looks to me like it's very dodgy, even in Britain.
Oh, it is. It's very dodgy. I mean, they're hoping that because, you know, that word anti-Semitism, it's like it's a weaponized word. And, you know, if someone is called an anti-Semite, you kind of recoil and go, oh, no, think about those poor Jews who died in those concentrated those gas chambers and everything, you know, and that's the first reaction you get. So it shuts down the debate straight away. Racist is another word, you know, weaponized. And homophobe, all of these type of words. And so they say that people then who go on and express these what call anti-Semitic racist views then are somehow criminals. Now, I can't get that, because words, you know, whatever you might say, you know, the old thing that we learned when we were at school, that sticks and stones may break your bones, but names will never hurt you. You know?
Yes. Words never harm me.
Yeah, exactly. So, and they are somehow trying to criminalize this, and I think they're failing because there is no foundation in law anywhere. There's none. And it's actually disgraceful what's going on in Germany, the amount of people who have been incarcerated for actually doing the right thing.
Actually, honest, genuine citizens who yeah. are good citizens, yeah. and they're sitting in jail. It's beyond. It's truly hideous. And, yeah. and you know something else. When we talk about these, about racist and anti-Semitic, you know what also amazes me, is you get Mein Kampf, and anything racist or Hitler or whatever, this is bad and evil. But if you actually go and look in all the Western world, including Britain, Karl Marx's Das Kapital is allowed everywhere. Yes. But Karl Marx, it is Karl Marx who advocates violent overthrow of the system.
Mm.
Nobody else is doing that.
Yeah.
But somehow Karl Marx is acceptable everywhere in the Western yeah. world.
Yeah, that's why you have this.
And the crux of his thing is violent overthrow of the system.
Mm. That's why you have the cultural Marxists now who are coming out and doing what they're doing. I mean, they, when you look at these Antifa and whatever, what they're doing, they're committing the violent acts.
Yes.
You know, we saw it in the UK there with these European elections, like the Tommy Robinson. I know Tommy, you know, he's a dodgy character, but they came out, you know, they're throwing milkshakes at the people, you know. And there was even one person who put out there, well, you know, well, next time it might be grenades. This was put out on Twitter.
Nice.
You know, yeah.
See, these are, and nothing happens to them.
No, exactly. This is the thing. So this is what I'd be saying to all these police officers out there. Listen to what they're saying. Listen to what we're doing. We're trying to be peaceful. We're trying to put the truth out to people, to get people at least to, if you don't agree with us, fine. But at least give us a platform. You know, we're allowed a platform as well to be able to speak our minds and what we see. And what we see, we're going down the righteous, peaceful path here. And yet we're the criminals. And then these guys, these scum, are out there threatening people. I mean, really threatening people. This is horrendous.
I can't remember if it was Monica Schaefer who mentioned it or Alfred Schaefer, but somebody said to me that in Germany, Antifa even threw acid in people's faces.
Yeah, I think I heard about this.
And,
yeah.
and nothing happens to them.
No.
And I've heard this. I've got a South African friend who's been living in the UK for many years. Mm-hmm. And he tells me how utterly terrified. And he's not what you would call right wing. He's a soft conservative. Mm-hmm. And he tells me how absolutely terrified these soft conservatives are, including himself. Okay. He lives in London, right? Mm-hmm. They are absolutely terrified of Antifa. And yeah. Antifa comes and gets people to lose their jobs. Antifa yep. gets all kinds of things to happen to destroy people's lives, but yep. nothing's happening to Antifa. And these are all genuine, honest people, and they are terrorized inside Britain.
Yeah.
But Antifa can get away with anything the hell, and some leftist can go and report you to somebody and lose your job or some other thing can happen to you. To me, I would say, why aren't the police and the intelligence services investigating Antifa?
Because that
should be investigated. How are they able to carry out acts, harmful acts, and dangerous and actually physically harm people,
mm-hmm.
and nothing happens to them?
Yeah.
They are clearly the true terrorist organization, and maybe that's where the military intelligence and spies should be looking at. How is it that Antifa is able to actually get away with the things it gets away with?
Yeah. Well, there was just a thing that I went to a demonstration in Dublin before Christmas there. Do you remember when this UN Global Compact thing came out? It was signed in, I think, in Marrakesh in Morocco, where it was basically saying that Europe is going to be flooded with 100 million blacks and Middle Easterners in the next 20, 30 years, okay?
Unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. But so there was, there was a demonstration. There was a new political party here called IR Exit, who were also wanting to get out of the EU. But they're also called the Irish Freedom Party. And we had a demonstration outside the parliament. And there was about, say, 200 of us. We all had our Irish flags, you know, protect our borders, our heritage, our culture. And then you had the Antifa on the other side. And it's funny that there was a police cordon around the Antifa, but not us. It's not strange. That kind of, and all you could hear from the Antifa was, Nazi scum off our street. Nazi scum off our streets. And then a couple of people actually tried to go up and talk with these people and say, you know, we're trying to save our country. You know, you're Irish people, aren't you? I mean, you want to save your country. You care about your country. And it was like, F off, Nazi. F off, Nazi. These people, Jan, I don't know what's happened to them. I think some kind of a mind virus or something has got in there. They're completely brainwashed or something. It's weird to watch.
So you witnessed this?
Oh yeah, I saw this myself. Yeah, firsthand.
And
there's the funny thing: we had our Irish flags holding them up high and proud. And what flags do they have? The hammer and sickle and the rainbow flag. Isn't that great?
Are you serious? Did they have the hammer and sickle?
Yes.
Oh wow!
Imagine we had a kind of a swastika flag or something. We would have been arrested straight away. Gone.
Yes.
But you can carry a communist flag. You know, the communism which killed what, over 100 million people at least. That's a conservative estimate here.
Yes.
People in the 20th century alone, the most murderous, horrible regime ever to have came on this planet ever.
Yes.
And yet that they're allowed to carry this flag and they can wear T-shirts of Che Guevara and Lenin and everything. If you walk around the streets with a T-shirt with Adolf Hitler on it, you'd be nabbed. You know, I mean, this is the craziness of the world we're living in now. But I think, Jan, I think it's beginning to turn now. People are beginning to say, this is pure bullshit and we've had enough. They really are. I think people are just saying, I've had enough now. We've kind of let it go on a bit too long, I think. And now we're trying to just pull it back and say, hang on. Let's put an end to all of this. And I think we'll get somewhere, Jan. I think it might take a bit more time yet, but I think we're getting there.
Yes, I'm liking a lot of stuff that I'm seeing, because it's moving in far into the twilight zone. In fact, by definition, it was already far beyond reasonableness 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. We are way into some kind of weirdo situation by now. And you know what's another thing that interests me is, but very interesting what you describe about those commies, the mm-hmm. Antifa who were commies. You mm-hmm. see, this is a rerun of Adolf Hitler's time. Because Adolf Hitler and Mussolini had to face these communists who were basically fighting them on the streets and mm-hmm. stopping them from having their free speech. So we're effectively back to a rerun of that time, and where the Jew and his in this case it seems his communist allies, the Jew and his communist allies has already created the enemy army in your own country.
Yeah.
They have already, and this is a very important thing for America too, because they, Alex Linder used to talk about how things are polarizing. And these people are deliberately polarizing it, and they are taking it. Their goal, actually, is to just start getting you people to kill each other. That's really what it is.
That's it, yeah. That's
actually what they want. They actually want Antifa and you to get stuck into each other.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
That's really the Jew goal here.
Yeah.
And then once they get into that, then there's no more talking.
Mm.
But if your police and your people have got any decency or loyalty to your country, they should realize that this is a total setup. That the real issue here is Antifa, not you.
Exactly. But the sad thing is, all these Antifa are our own people. They're white people. That's the sad thing.
Well, that is the brainwashing that's taken.
It's the brainwashing that's happened, yeah. And I think these people are beyond saving, I think. I really do think that, Jan, because I just saw these people and it was like you look at them, the lights are on, but nobody's home, you know?
How old are they? They're all
mainly kind of students. This is going through university, you see. This is what's happening in the universities now. All this stuff has been pumped through. All the student unions are all commies. They're all this communist. Oh, we have to, you know, look after the gays and all the feminists. Oh, my God, the feminist stuff is unreal, too. And, but we're pro-abortion as well. All this cultural Marxist crap. It's coming out of the universities. This is the training ground, I think, for a lot of these kids. Because a lot of kids, they go to school, they want to go to universities and get out and get a good job, right? That's why you do that. Yeah. But they're going into these cultural Marxist training centers and they're coming out totally brainwashed and screwed up completely. These people couldn't hold down a job, Jan, seriously. In fact, they wouldn't know what to do with a hammer and nail. That's not bad, right?
Well, here in South Africa, I was saying to a family member of mine, one of the kids is going for he's gonna get a job. He needs some, let's call it medical training. He's gonna go into a medical field. And I said to my family member, I said, just be careful there. You're sending your son off to the university and your son may come out of there a communist.
Exactly.
And that is exactly what's happening in America. That's clearly happening there by you. Mm. So, but the good news, I would say the good news is that all these people in Antifa are young. The reason I say it's good news is give them a chance to grow older. It may take quite a while for it to wear off. Mm-hmm. It may take 10 or more years for it to wear off. Mm-hmm. But don't give up on it. The fact that it's the youth, the youth can be deluded easily and later they'll wake up. How long it will take is the question. And I will tell you something I saw that relates to this in my trip to America. There was an event that we had in America at a point where there was a husband and wife. And I got to understand a bit about their background. And I want to tell you something. These people in their entire lifetimes probably never once heard anything racist or were in any way racist, conservative, right-wing, in even the slightest. These people's heads have been 100% for all of their lifetimes, 100% filled with liberal, if not leftist, message. And yet, when I was talking to them, they were open to listening, and they were talking to other people, and they were willing to consider and talk about whites saving themselves. Mm-hmm. So that for me was something that was really important, because I never anticipated meeting somebody who's, I can tell you from the discussions with them, every single thing in their whole lives has been liberal, if not leftist. Yeah. And yet now in their older age, they are breaking out of it. I think there's hope. It's just, unfortunately, it takes time, unfortunately.
Yeah. The harsh realities of life is going to kick in at some point, you know?
Yes, and I think it's coming in faster, too, than before. You know, previously I would have said that they're lost for 30 years, but I'm not so sure anymore. I'm not so sure anymore. I think people can be reversed. If it's young people, definitely, they will change later. Yeah. They will change.
I hope so, Jan, but just what I saw myself experienced firsthand, I was like, oh my God, these people are lost. You know? I really thought that, yeah.
At some point, their brains will kick in, make no mistake. If they are white people, at some point, somehow, their brains will kick in. Because I am coming across more and more people who are completely, completely broken away from the system. They're not the majority, but I can tell you, there are people that I've come across that I never thought these people would break out of the system, and you can see they've completely switched off. So for me, it may take some time.
So we have to remain optimistic here, I think, because it's very easy to get pessimistic about this stuff, because sometimes I just shake my head when I go out on the street and just see these young kids buried in their phones, and you know, and you try and talk with them, and they can barely speak to you. You know, it's like something's very wrong here.
But what
I'm saying though, Jan, is there are a lot of young people now because of the internet, I think, who are looking at all sorts of different things, and are beginning to come on board. You know, so there's a kind of a split there, maybe, you know, where a lot of young people will go down the cultural Marxist route because it's kind of easy, and it's just like shouting at people and playing the victim. It's very easy to do that. But then there's other kids who are kind of going, well, hold on a second now, you know. And they, you know, they've got inquisitive minds, and they want to know a bit more critical thinking, a bit of that, you know. These are the people I think we need to get through. And then they can influence the people of their generation, you know. Because they kind of look at us as old boomers and all the rest of it, you know. We know nothing.
Yes. Well, the point I just wanted to make quickly is that keep in mind that the Jews and the communists have got many decades head start over us.
Yeah.
Remember, we haven't been in this for long. We're talking like 20 years. They've been at it for decades and decades. And in the case of the Jews, they got centuries of freaking experience.
Oh yeah. They're masters of deception, and they've done it. And I think this is why they're trying to deceive us again with this anti-Semitism stuff, but people aren't falling for it now, I don't think, you know. So that's why, you know, when they pulled Graham in for this ridiculous nonsense, Graham was just, you know, he stood as a man. He took his power back. He realized who he was. And he faced the enemy full on by himself.
Yes.
Without his medications even. So he was in a weakened state, and yet somehow deep within there was a resolve inside, you know, his consciousness or whatever, something came out and he went, no. That's
yes.
it.
Yes.
Very powerful. Very, very powerful. And I think this is the way we do it. I think peaceful non-compliance and all that kind of stuff, it's very, very powerful. And they can't deal with that. They want people going, rah, 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 kill them all, blah, blah. That's what they want. We don't do that. We have to box clever here and play them at their own game in many ways and turn around, reverse the headache on them. You know?
Yeah, I agree with you. There's a lot of stuff that we've hardly even begun. Mm-hmm. You know, even here in South Africa, I've been trying to tell people that, you know, one way we can work is simply stop supporting the system. Stop being the solution to our enemy's problems.
Exactly,
every day, white, like in South Africa, every day white people are actually saving this country. And I say to them, you should actually not be saving this country. We must save ourselves.
Yeah.
And we must keep things to ourselves. Mm-hmm. We should be saving our looking out for ourselves and only ourselves. And if whites withdraw even slightly from the system, system's going to implode.
That's
us that's making that system function.
Yeah, that's what I've been to South Africa twice, and you know, I was there in the apartheid days, and then I was there in 2013, and I'm just thinking, there's what, 4.5 million white people there now? Is that the white population? Four and a half to 5 million, something like that.
4.2.
And they are propping up the other, what, 60 million? Is it?
Yeah, it's like close to 50 million. Yeah, easy. Yeah. Easy. In fact, I think the government was boasting that there are something like 17 million people getting government handouts. So there's, you know, almost four times the white population is getting government handouts, and the whites are the ones actually holding the place up. Yeah. But in your country, it's the same, you know. And you know what's another thing is those white policemen must also be asking themselves the question about, you know, why is this guy who's like one of us, why is he resisting in this way? There's got to be something that has made them ask questions about themselves.
Absolutely. You know, as I say, it's a great thing, you know, put a mirror up in front of people and say, have a good look in there, guys. Have a good look.
Yes. Is this what you really want to support?
Yeah, absolutely. Just put the mirror up in front and say, right, what are you actually doing here? I mean, you know, you obviously want the best for your family and your community and all the rest. It's great. We all want that. But look what you're doing. You're destroying it as well. I mean, that doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up.
Well, Alfred told me that he was saying to the police in Germany, he was saying to them, you know, what are you going to tell your children tonight? You know, that you went and you harassed an innocent person and put them in jail for absolutely no crime. You know, are you proud of yourself for doing that?
Yeah.
There have to be people inside the system with a conscience. Yeah. There have to be.
Yeah, well, you know, they try to make us feel guilty about being racist or anti-Semitic. Well, turn it back on them and feel guilty about what you're doing to our society and to your own people. Turn the guilt around on them, you see?
Yes.
And it's like, again, those policemen who interviewed Graham that night, they went home that night to their wives and said, the wife said, oh, hello, darling. What, you know, how was your night? Oh, we interviewed some weirdo who wouldn't say anything. But he made me think. He made me think about a few things, you know.
And you know what? The weirder it was, the better. If they've never come across anything like that before, they will be asking themselves all kinds of questions. Among the first will be, what do we do the next time we run into a guy like this? How do we answer these questions?
Exactly, because they're just used to bringing guys into the station, and you know, yeah, they give their name and they say, yeah, we did this, we did that, and yeah, book them, arrest them, court, all the rest of it. That's what they do. It's just it's kind of like it's a mill, you know. It's just everything just goes through a system and in one end out the other, right? That's what they're used to. Well, Graham came in and he threw us a big spanner in the works.
Well, also, I mean, those police in Britain, I mean, they must be out to be hunting real criminals. I cannot see that any of these people are interested in just a bunch of
mental rubbish.
You know,
yeah, the night before Graham was arrested, actually, because he went to a meeting, kind of like one of these town hall meetings where the local people in the town were concerned about the crime rates in the town, burglaries and stuff like that. And again, this is due to all these,
non-white
third worlders coming in. You know, he was actually telling me last weekend a restaurant was broken into and the weekend savings were taken, you know. And when they were there was one policeman there kind of saying, yeah, we apologize. There's, you know, we're being underfunded, we're overstretched, we're under-resourced, all the usual blah, blah, but we're trying to do the best we can. And then the next day, they send 8 policemen to Graham Hart's door. Now, what does that tell you? What does that tell you?
Yeah.
And he mentioned that, Graham mentioned that in the police station, and they had to look away. They were like, they had to look away. They didn't know what to do.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So they looked away when he brought that up.
He did, yeah.
Then he really touched a nerve.
Oh, he touched a nerve there. Big time.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. Wow. Mm. Very impressed.
So that's what I mean. You know, when they tried to put the guilt on us saying, oh, look, you're evil and hateful and blah, blah, blah. You turned around and say, well, what are you doing? Look, have a look in that mirror, guys. There you go. Have a look. And then all of a sudden they stop. They don't know what to do next, you know. So what Graham did was incredibly powerful. I'm very proud of that man, what he did, you know, in the situation he was in a weakened state. It happened out of the blue. And yet somehow he found the resolve to stand up to this. Because I was worried that they would kind of break him, you know, through constant questioning. You know, I was kind of worried that if he didn't have his medication and stuff, that they could have worn him down. He could have got weak and he just wanted to get out of there. And he would have just given in just to get out of there, you know.
And
but he didn't. He didn't do that. He didn't do that.
How old were the cops?
I asked Graham. I think one guy was in his mid-50s, maybe. Another guy was in his mid-40s or late 30s, mid-40s, something like that.
Okay, so they're not young either.
No. They're married men with families as well. You know what I mean?
They will definitely identify more with Graham.
I think so. Yeah.
And they'll have the depth. You know, they're not just youngsters just taking orders. You know, they'll have more depth.
Yeah, and I think Graham said as well, because Graham's son actually just joined the police force, kind of a reserve police force. But Graham said he thinks he knew one of the cops who was interviewing him, kind of very secondhand type of thing, you know. He knew somebody who knew somebody. I think he played football, you know, because Graham is into, you know, soccer and all the rest of it. And he thinks he's seen him somewhere playing football somewhere, you know. So he's a football man, you know. He likes the sport and all that. And so he's part of that whole community, you know, and he's probably proud to be from Cornwall and all that, because Cornwall is it's part of England at the moment, but it's a kind of a Celtic nation. It's kind of like Wales and Scotland, and they even had their own language. They feel a bit separate from England, so and they have a proud kind of Cornish identity. And you know, again, Graham has always, in his music career, has produced Cornish songs. He stood up for Cornish kind of nationalism and all of that, you know. So, and he's, again, well respected in the community and around Cornwall, because, you know, he was doing gigs all over the place and people loved his music, and he was quite successful in that career that he had. So he's well known, he's well liked, and I think these guys know that, and they're kind of looking at themselves wondering, why are we bringing this guy in here for this?
Yes. Oh. You see, because and like have even seen him, then you know, that will make them also say, you know, this is not an outsider. This is just a normal guy that we know.
Exactly. You know,
why are we questioning him? He didn't go and smash somebody's window.
No.
He didn't hurt anyone.
No. He just does a radio. He just does a radio. In fact, he's taking a back seat on the radio now. I'm doing most of the talking. He does the producing, you know, pushes all the buttons and all that. Well, I do the talking. I think he just preferred that. I think he liked what I was doing. So he said, you take the helm. And I said, fine, it's no problem. So, really, I mean, Graham, you know, we've been doing that now for the last 6 or 7 months now, I think. It's before Christmas, I think we decided to go that way. So really, you know, it's me they probably should be really coming after. But I mean, I'm in Ireland. So, and over here in Ireland, we have in our constitution, we have free speech. We're like America. We have that in our constitution. I think Ireland and Denmark are two countries that have constitutions where free speech is protected. As long as you don't... promote violence or take down, you know, governments, and you know, that kind of thing. But you can say whatever you want. So no one in Ireland has ever been penalized for anti-Semitic views or racist views or anything like that. They might get no one has ever been brought to court. You might lose your job or something like that, but it'll never, you'll never go in front of a judge for any of this stuff. Here in this country, so far, I mean, they're trying to bring it in. They really are trying to bring it in, and of course, there's a lot of these Jewish professors. There's one lady is in Trinity College, is one of the main universities in Dublin. Ronit Lenten is her name. She's from Israel, and she's really, really pushing. Oh, Ireland has to catch up with the rest of the world and bring in hate speech. But they're going to have to. But the thing is, they're going to have a referendum on that one to change it. And I can't see the Irish people changing that one. You know, I mean, we've done some really stupid things in the past by passing abortion and gay marriage and all that type of stuff. But I can't see them changing free speech. No way. I can't see them passing that one, no.
Beautiful.
So I can say what I need to say. Again, as long as I don't promote violence or anything, which I don't do anyway, so I can call out the Jews. I don't care. I'll say it, you know. And I don't have a job as such. I don't have any. I mean, I'm, you know, just living on a frugal existence, but I get by and I do it quite well. I've managed how to do that. And so I have nothing to lose here, Jan. So it doesn't bother me. You know, I have no fear of anything. So it's great. It's a great place to be.
You're moving into that space where rebellion can happen.
Exactly,
And there are more and more such people around.
Well, there are, yeah. Oh, there's more, yeah. Absolutely, there are. And that's why we're connecting. See, we're connecting with all these different people around the world, which is amazing to see. That's why, like, I'm speaking to you. You're in South Africa. I am in Ireland. We've connected somehow through the internet. Somehow we've done this and other people, you know. And it's an amazing kind of group that we all come in together and we know what the problem is and we're discussing things and we're throwing things out there and we're learning and going ahead and we're moving forward because we can see that this whole system is wrong. Everything is upside down. We have to get it right. We mightn't get it perfect, but we have to get it back on the right path again. Look after our own people, our own country, our heritage, and the next generation that are coming through, because we owe it to them. You know, my grandparents, they fought it for the Irish independence against the British, you know. They risked their lives.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I kind of feel that they've handed the torch on to me and says, now you've got a different invader now. Here, off you go. You know?
Yes. Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. I totally agree with you. There was something I was going to say, but very interesting about Denmark and Ireland. Very interesting. I didn't know that. I like that a lot.
Yeah, then, we're about the only two countries that don't have Holocaust denial laws or kind of any hate speech kind of laws. It's obviously frowned upon, you know, obviously if anybody says anything, you know, the media will jump on it and say, oh, racist, blah, blah, blah. But they can't touch you.
You know? That other thing that you mentioned there about that Jewish professor saying, oh, you've got to catch up with the rest of the world. Yeah. That is a line that they used here on the Afrikaans people and the whites in South Africa many times in the past. Mm-hmm. Always, you need to catch up with the rest of the world. You are behind the times.
Yeah.
All rubbish. Just Jewish crap.
Well, this is what they call progressive. I mean, and there's nothing progressive about this. This is actually regressive, as we're going the other way.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Communism and liberalism captured the term progressive decades and decades ago, but there's nothing progressive about it. It's freaking into the true nightmare. That is one of the biggest lies of all.
I mean, what kind of baffles me is how they think they can get away with this somehow, you know? And that's why I think they're extremely worried now. And that's why you're seeing all this censorship on YouTube and Google and everywhere. It's because they know the truth's getting out there and people are waking up. I think they're really worried now, Jan. I really do.
Tell me, what's making you think?
Well, because people are waking up. And I think one of the biggest ones is the Holocaust lie. Right? More and more people are waking up to this. 3 or 4 years ago, if I brought this up in a conversation, no one would listen to me. Now people are listening to me. Something's happened. There's a shift. And I'm seeing more and more. And I'm seeing a lot of people here in Ireland. I thought we were kind of asleep at the wheel a bit, but you know, we're kind of last, I suppose, in many ways, because we're on the western edge of Europe. We pick up late on stuff, but I'm seeing more and more Irish people now waking up just by looking at different. There's a lot of people now going out on YouTube. There's a lady by the name of Gemma O'Doherty, who used to be a journalist, a very well known journalist with one of the big mainstream newspapers here, and her whole thing was all about anti-corruption and all the rest of it. And she got fired from her job because she exposed corruption within the police force. And now she's out on her own. She won her court. She took it to court and she won and she got a big settlement. And now she's using all of that to get out there and wake people up. She's waking people up to all this multiculturalism, through things like vaccines, 5G, all the stuff that are affecting us. And she is gaining momentum every single day, man. It is brilliant to see. You know, now she won't talk about Jews on YouTube because she knows it's gone. But I think she's fully aware of it. She's well aware of it. But you just can't say it. But when the time is right, I think she will say it, you know.
Now, on that topic, I met a Swedish journalist who visited South Africa quite some time back. And we had some face-to-face discussions. And she told me how she'd worked for a Jewess who owned a newspaper or whatever. She was a journalist, and this Jewess was in charge. And how she was also forced to change her stories, and and how eventually she was also fired immediately afterwards. So the Jewess actually bullied her into changing her stories, and then when she finally did make the changes to have it the way the Jewess wanted it, the next day or something, the Jewess actually fired her. But and she won't go and talk about the Jews in public. But I want to tell you that there are quite a lot of people I've come across who are awake, and they are still inside, let's call it inside the system. They go to work every day. They look like normal whites. They will deal with any black or anybody else who comes along. They'll behave all in the proper, correct, liberal way. But inside their hearts and souls, when they go home, they are different people. And there must be lots more of these people. When I went to America and Canada, I ran into quite a number of those people. And they would come and they'd tell me, and I could see their involvement in things. And when they go out to work every day, they are just another normal, liberal, loving citizen. But when they're at home tonight and they're thinking their own thoughts, and they get a chance to do something quietly when nobody is watching, they are different people. And I think that's huge. I think that's huge. I think we are definitely winning. And I think there's nothing wrong as far as we're concerned. We must just carry on doing what we're doing. We're starting to hurt the system.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, even my mother is like 83 years old, right? I mean, she's beginning to see it now. And she says, well, I've got nothing really against black people, but I don't want them here. You know? And that's just again, and a lot of old people are looking at that, and they're concerned because they're kind of like, these people are strangers, and who are they? And the culture is different, and they seem to have a nasty thing, way about them, you know? They don't get a good energy from them. You know, because they grew up in a time when everybody knew each other, you know, everyone got along with each other. And it was, you know, I wasn't saying it was perfect back then, but you know what I mean? There was a good sense of community. But then you have these strangers coming in now, and it's messing it all up. And these elderly people are now kind of lost here, and they're beginning to speak out too. They're saying, sorry, this is not on now, you know. Can't have this happening. So there's things going on. And we don't know exactly what's going on, to be quite honest. But the problem is that we have a media that is so controlled, or putting out a narrative, and it seems like when you read the media that we're really messed up, that we have no chance. But actually, take that media away, and I think you're seeing a lot of awake people out there really looking at things now and questioning things, which is great, you know. And that's why we're here. You know, it just shows that this all the stuff that I've been doing this for years. It's about 2008, I think, when I really woke up to everything. And all the stuff that I've been saying to people down the years is all now coming to fruition. It's taken a while, but it's done. I'm seeing the results now. People have come up to me and said to me, all that stuff you were telling me about 3 or 4 years ago, about 9/11 and all these type of things. I mean, you were right. You were right. And it's beautiful. It's great to get that feedback and say, and it's not like, well, you know, I'm now a superstar. I'm saying, well, I'm glad. Now go further with it. Off you go. Keep checking. Yes. Keep going. You know.
Brilliant. You see, I was thinking today when I was driving around here in Johannesburg, doing things, I was looking at this place and I was thinking to myself, we are just, we got all these blacks swarming all over the place. They have taken over suburb after suburb that 20, 30 years ago was white.
Yeah.
And I was thinking to myself, you know, just a note to oneself, never listen to a liberal or a Jew. Mm-hmm. Never listen to anything they tell you about the future. Yeah. It is so wrong. And all these things that are now a reality in South Africa are only are the very things that the whites were always concerned about, and now it's here, now it's real. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just two final questions about Graham.
Yeah,
it's interesting that they asked him about his political views.
Mm-hmm.
Surely that in and of itself is a little bit dodgy, even in a place like Britain.
Yeah. Well, you know, in Britain, you do have what you call right-wing parties. You know, again, a lot of people look at Tommy Robinson as a kind of right-wing, but Tommy Robinson is an Israel stooge. I think we kind of know that, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And he's just playing a part just to go in there and cause trouble. I think that's what he's – and he's been paid well for it too.
Yes.
But they try to want to identify people with, whether you're a kind of right-wing, you know. There seems to be, I don't know if you've seen it, there's a thing that was issued by the British Army, how to spot a right-wing extremist. Did you see that, Jan? I'll send you the link of it, right? And it's quite amazing, like anybody who's patriotic. Now, if you were joining the army, surely you'd be patriotic, wouldn't you?
That's exactly what one would think. Same if you were in the police or intelligence. Patriotism should be at the top of the list.
Yeah. And as low as about 19 or 20 points, I think them offhand, but I'll send them to you and you read them and you laugh. I mean, and this is the British Army putting this out. So what are they trying to bring in there? A bunch of pussies. That's what they want.
You know something? Quite a few months ago, I read a thing about the CIA, where the CIA was talking about improving diversity in the CIA. And I read this stuff and I thought to myself, this is just crazy, loony fucking shit. But I think that the Jews are fooling even the top intelligence people. They're screwing with everybody's head very successfully. But there have got to be people inside the who resist it or who are wise to it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually busy reading something from World War II about communism in America and the many things that happened under Roosevelt. And I want to tell you that it is absolutely shocking to see the kinds of things that happened inside America during World War II under Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. And there are also genuine people inside the system who are resisting these things, but you just don't know about it because all of this is hush hush. And there were generals being fired, people being removed from positions, and so forth. I will bet you that even inside Britain, there have got to be people inside the system who are fighting this, whether it's the British Army or whether it's in the CIA in America. There have got to be people who are fighting this, and they themselves are being knocked out of the system. But because those are closed circles, you and I won't be hearing about it on the news.
No.
And that brings me, you know, to the issue of the news. The thing that you hear on the mass media is just one big fucking lying machine, man.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That's all it is. It's just, and the more places I go, the more people I talk to, the more things I see, I'm telling you, it's just a lying machine, man. They're lying about everything everywhere. It's definitely not the way that you are told. And the more people that are red pilling and realizing, you know what, If people even just get to the point where they stop listening to the system and start questioning everything, which I think is becoming very big now,
yeah,
I think that's excellent news. The whole system is going to reach a point where people are going to be sick and tired of this nonsense.
Yeah, I think it's beginning to creak a little bit, Jan. It's beginning to creak. That's why, as I said, a lot of this censorship that you're seeing now shows that they're obviously afraid. And they seem to be worried. I mean, we don't know exactly what they might have other plans in store. I don't know, but the fact of the matter is, more and more people are kind of beginning to struggle in life. You know, I mean, we all went to life thinking that as a left of school, or if you go to college or whatever, that you get a nice job and marry and settle down and all that kind of stuff, right? And that's not happening anymore. I mean, you see it here in Ireland, you see it across Europe as well. Like, just to rent a place now, it's beyond the means of most ordinary people. Just to rent a room in or somewhere, you know, just something small, or to try and buy a house even. And a lot of people are kind of going, well, you know, what are we? How, you know, we have to do something about this. You know, where are we going to live? We can't live with our parents. And it's and I think with the whole, what they're trying to bring in is this whole solution of social housing, which is communism.
I've not heard of this.
Yeah, social housing, which is kind of where you pay a kind of a cheap rent to live, but you'll be living in a small little box, which will probably have a camera on you 24/7. You'll be on this kind of Internet of Things, you know, the smart grid. You know, you see that word smart all around the place, don't you? Smart this, yes. Smart that. That's the whole smart grid. It's all part of Agenda 21. And again, I would urge people to look at Agenda 21, particularly the 17 steps of sustainable development. Just go and read all of them. And in the middle of all of that is orderly migration. That's in there. Mass vaccinations for everybody. Okay. So, and it's all about the whole climate change thing as well. Well, let's put all that in. And I think we're moving into, they're trying to bring in a form of law called communitarianism, which is another communitarianism.
Interesting.
Which is I'll just send you some links on that one. It's a kind of a fusion between communism and crony capitalism. And they're trying to they need to get rid of the nation state and bring everything down to the local level, where it's going to be councils and cities and mayors who are going to have all the power. And you have to be part of the community. But they're selling the lie that, this is all community based and, you know, you all have a say. But they use this thing called a Delphi technique to bring people bring them to a consensus. So basically, if you want to be part of the community, you have to agree that mass migration into your country is good. Homosexuality is good. Transgenderism is good. Climate change is, it's happening. You know, that's the new religion. You know, you have to be part of all of that. And that's the new control system, you see. And if you don't agree with that, gulag for you.
Yes. Okay.
Communism. That's where we're going. So it's not really communism. It's because all the big business and everything, they'll keep taking in the shekels. Oh yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. The monopolies and oligopolies are still going to prosper.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And we're going to be, you know, when they talk about the word equality, we're all going to be equally poor.
Yes.
And that's why I think they're bringing in all this dirt in from Africa into our nations, you know, to bring, you know, it's a race to the bottom.
Yes. Well said. Well said. Yeah. Race to the bottom. Yeah. Very interesting. You touch on another topic that I'm not going to go into now, but
I'll talk about that one again. You know,
I'll tell you, I'll just say quickly, the topic that I'm thinking of is how much is the white person being screwed by the economic system? If you were out living in a rural area and you had to build your own house, grow your own food, and just generally look after yourself, how much better off might you be than in this system? And then you have to ask yourself, all this computerization, all this efficiency and all this other stuff, how much, where are those benefits from those systems? Are they accruing to you or are they accruing to somebody else? Because it looks to me like everything is actually being stolen from all of us via the entire system.
Yeah, right.
And you're finding yourself poorer and poorer, and you ask yourself, where are all these freaking costs and things coming from? We got the same questions here. I ask these questions over here in South Africa myself. And it's a very interesting topic. I think that every white person out there is being screwed financially, but it's through 101 different hidden Jewish mechanisms. Among them, inflation, but I think there's a whole lot more. Yeah. I think there's much more to this. If you had a true system, you would see how high our standard of living really should be. You know, if you consider that, like, the average couple, you know, can't even have, struggle to have even one child or two children, right. God help them if they can manage that in their life. Yet, if you go back in history, you'll find 100 years ago, whites were having a dozen children. Yeah. And the medicine and science was much more backward then. Mm-hmm. But how was it that they could have large families? Families are like were a regular thing among the Boers here in South Africa. Yeah. And people had families of my own mother and father. My mother was one of seven children. My father was one of six. But they were by no means big. There were families that were much bigger than that.
Oh, yeah, I know that.
And you've got to ask yourself, how is it that 100 years later that we can't have a man and woman having 16 children? Surely it is scientifically and medically possible for a white woman now to have 16 children and not to have it affect her health negatively if you compare it with what they were doing 100 years ago. Yeah. The Romans were... You know, one third of all Roman women died in childbirth, and they were able to survive. They were able to function.
Yep.
Why can't we do it? Something is very wrong, my
friend. I have a friend in town who's the youngest of 17, Jan. Two of his brothers have died because they were a lot older than him, right? So, and I think one other died as during, but even 17 kids. And yet the father went out and worked, the mother stayed at home, and yet they were poor, but they were all fed and they were all clothed.
Yes.
And they had a roof over their head.
And that
so it can be done.
That should be possible, man. You know, we worry about our population, but why can't average whites have 10 children? Why can't the average husband and wife have 10 children? I'm sure that our science and engineering and everything allows it, really.
Yeah, I
know. So there's something wrong. That's all I'm saying. Something huge wrong. is freaking wrong.
You know, if you notice, if you're among kind of people who have got big families and they got all the cousins and aunts and uncles and everything, and there's a big family get together, it's a happy atmosphere, isn't it? It's kind of a nice, you're part of your own. You're part of your own. People, your own clan, you know, it's got a nice feel about it. But that's why they want to destroy the family unit, because that is one of the main pillar of society is the family. And that's why they're going for things like abortion, gay marriage, and all this sort of stuff, you know. And we have to be able to try and bring all that back. And of course, they're saying, well, it's so expensive now to have children, you know, you have to get them to school and
all rubbish,
you know. Yeah.
Rubbish. There's something wrong.
Once we change the whole economy, take usury out of the system, and we can thrive. We can thrive big time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, the final thing about Graham is that I was sitting and thinking their main reason for going after him was the song.
Mainly the song, yeah.
Mainly the song. And you know something? I was thinking to myself, why are they worried about the songs of Alison Chablow? Why are they worried about this song? I particularly loved Graham's song.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering whether they aren't afraid of it because it's good, because it's catchy, that this freaking thing can go viral.
Yeah.
And they must be worried because if a song is bothering them, it can only be that they are worried it's going to spread.
Yeah. Well, his song is still up on YouTube because he put a disclaimer in. He says for Gentiles only and for, you know, people who are offended by this, switch off now, you know. Something to that effect. And he did it in all lower case because that's our language. Capital letters is their language. And also where they made a mistake in their warrant where they said about relating to the music videos of Hoax Train, it was a capital H and a capital T. If you look at Graham's video, it's a small H and a small T. So they got that wrong. That's wrong.
Nice.
See, you get them on their words, you see. We use our words. Everything's lowercase. Never sign your name capital. Always small. Lowercase. Because that's you, the man, right? Capital. Look at the word capital. What does that mean? Money. That's the commercial side of things, okay? This is all these. Once you learn all this stuff, you find a way of just getting yourself out of this system, and you know they can't come after you then. It's just because I'm the man. I'm the sovereign. I'm me. I look after my own kingdom. This is my kingdom. My body, my mind, my soul. This is mine. It's my property. You can't come in here unless I allow. Unfortunately, what we're doing is we're consenting for them to come in and basically pillage us, rape us, literally, us up the backside, you know?
Yes.
This is what we're allowing them to do. So we have to find, you know, just clever ways of pushing back. And as I said, Graham did a fantastic job last week. And he is now as defiant as hell. He is ready for them. He says, come on, guys, give me your best.
Oh, wow.
Oh, he's ready to go, man. He's ready.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well,
so he's in good form. He's great. There was a bit of his wife was very concerned and worried and all the rest of it. So he had to settle the family down and get all that together. But everything's good. Everything's good there on that front, and he's ready to go. They're all supporting him.
Excellent. So yeah. I would like you to keep me informed of what happens in the future, and I'm very keen to see what happens.
Yeah.
What do the police do? What happens with his computers? Mm-hmm. And let's see, because this is going to tell us something very interesting about
incident. So, yeah. I think this is a big thing. I think, and it, you know, even on the show last night, I was watching the chat room and all the comments coming in, and everyone was going, "Yeah, this is fantastic. This is great." You know, but people are loving this because this is a guy that they know, who they listen to. You know. Every week, they you know, Hoax Train, they know all of that. You know, Graham is well loved out there. You know, you can tell. Fetch thinks Graham is fantastic. The two of them get on like a house on fire. And Graham said to me, he says, go out on Fetch's show and go public with this. You know, because Fetch has supported him, so he says, right, you go on his show and do it. And I gave it the best shot that I could. You know, and I said, I sent you the link there. You can listen to it later. And
excellent.
As I said, we're all coming together now, and hopefully we can learn from all of this, because this is going to come at us at some point in our lives, and we got to be ready. And once we know who we are, we stand in our own power. We have the power, not them. Don't be giving them the power. You have it. Push back. Hold up the mirror to them and say, look, guys, look. Don't be looking at me. Look at you. What are you doing?
Absolutely.
You know? So it's a positive turn of events, Jan. It was good. And let's hopefully now things can really move forward from this. And it was great.
Okay. Bryza, I'm gonna wind up, but I don't want you to quit because I just want to ask you a question or two afterwards.
Yeah, sure.
Anyway, let me just wind up. Okay, Braza, it was really awesome having you on the show and talking to you. It was very interesting. And, it's good stuff. They're coming after each one of us in a different way, but we're all learning and we're working more and more like a team. I think it's
Exactly.
fantastic.
Yeah, it's great. So
So
thank you, Jan, for inviting me on. It was good to talk to you. Great. You know,
it's
I've
been a
always
pleasure.
I've been a great admirer of what you've been doing there in South Africa as well, you know, and particularly that latest talk you did when you were over in the States about the African wars. I thought that was fascinating. I was absolutely fascinated by that. That was brilliant. So well done
Ah,
on that.
did you watch the Fash Bash?
Yeah, I did. I saw that one, yeah. And that's the other one that you did. And I mean, I knew a bit about that because, you know, I was born in Africa. I was born in Zambia. So I have a bit of a, you know, I like to see what's going on in Africa, you know. I kind of, you know, because I suppose I was born there, I feel I have an affinity for the place, you know. And just, you know, I was always reading about these wars in Angola and Mozambique and all these other places. And you just filled in a lot of dots. You joined a lot of dots for me there. And you could just see then
Excellent.
how it all kind of where it all comes down now, where what's happening in South Africa right now. And it was great. I thought that was fantastic. So that was a great job. So well done.
Excellent. Thank you very much. I'm glad. You see, and as you discuss, as we all discover, when push comes to shove, everybody's been lied to. Everybody everywhere. And I bet you there are lots more stories that are going to come out, plenty more. But yeah,
Indeed.
it's excellent. So thanks for being on the show, and we'll be
You're
chatting
welcome,
again.
Jan. We will indeed. Yeah. Thanks, Jan.